Ladies and gentlemen, a good morning to you. This is John Cameron Swayze in the NBC Newsroom in New York. Today's roundup includes spot news pickups from three overseas points, as well as the customary picture of capital doings direct from Washington. Our travels take us to Rome, where there is plenty to talk about, to London for late developments of the Big Four Conference, and to the Far East. A number of people have made newsworthy remarks, and we'll round those up at this point, but now, your announcer.
3/4 of all the grain raised in the United States has been going into the feeding of livestock to produce meat for American tables. But that grain is needed now to save the men, women, and children of European countries from starvation. That's why your government asks you to cut down on meat and thus save wheat to save lives. Observing Meatless Tuesday and Eggless Thursday will help. So will saving all the flour you can in baking. And remember to conserve all foods by not cooking or serving more than your family can eat, and by serving the foods which are plentiful in your local markets. Europe is hungry, and hungry men do not build a lasting peace. So it's up to you. Save meat, save wheat, save the peace. And now, back to the NBC Newsroom.
Overseas this morning, the news is topped by the general strike in Rome, now in its second day with no signs of let-up. In fact, there are reports that 20,000 communists are en route to the Italian capital from other parts of the country and that real violence may be just around the corner. The violence has not stopped in Jerusalem. Early reports today tell of grenades being thrown into Jewish shops with injuries to a number of persons. In this country, the toll in last night's Army C-47 plane crash near Memphis, Tennessee, stands at 20, possibly 21. All aboard were killed. The question is how many were on the plane when it hit a hillside near Memphis shortly after dark. It was en route from the West Coast and was within 2 miles of the Memphis Municipal Airport when it crashed. Presumably, all aboard were Army personnel. The helicopter, which yesterday rescued 3 of the 6 survivors of that ATC transport plane which crashed in Labrador, is ready for a second trip this morning to bring out the other 3 survivors of the disaster in which 23 were killed. First reports say a power failure caused that crash in inaccessible country near Goose Bay. The story is brighter from Medical Lake, Washington, where a B-29 crash landed in a field with 2 engines blazing. All members of the 10-man crew escaped serious injury. Among those with things to say in the news this morning is well-known Chicago University Chancellor Robert Hutchins, who looks on the brighter side. He says America is in no present danger of war with Russia, and is in no present danger from communism. He said world government is necessary, and therefore it is possible. But, says Chancellor Hutchins, it must be based on justice. And since we are the most prosperous and powerful nation in the world, we'll have to give up certain economic and political advantages. Consequently, it will cost the American people a good deal in various ways to have world government, but it would cost much more to have war. Famed scientist Dr. Vannevar Bush, head of the government's research board, announces a new study to be made about man. Ford reminds Dr. Bush, man is just as important as these machines we hear so much about when it comes to national defense. Hence, a scientific checkup on his behavior, why he acts like he does under a variety of circumstances. Politics is in the news. Henry Wallace doused any hopes the Democrats might have had that he would swing into the fold by saying that if he had to choose between President Truman and Senator Taft, he would favor the senator. And then he turned his attention to New York's Governor Dewey while visiting in the state capital of Albany and labeled Dewey a political opportunist who rarely ever has an idea until the Gallup poll proves 70% of the people are for it, which is, of course, a quotation of the Wallace remark. Meanwhile, Dewey was criticizing the president for the way he has been handling domestic affairs. The governor spoke at a dinner in Washington. It is a Washington where a top spot in the news is held by government official Edwin W. Pauley and the inquiry into his wheat trading transactions, where freshman Senator Baldwin continues to defy the heads of his own Republican Party, and where the subject of inflation, or anti-inflation if you like, is getting plenty of attention from both parties. Getting back to the international scene, in Paris, the National Assembly takes up the matter of relations with Russia. They remain badly strained following the French accusation that Russia used a repatriation camp to forcibly remove French citizens, some 60 of them, to the Soviet against their will. With some progress at last achieved, the Big Four foreign ministers continue their meetings, and we'll hear about this during our global tour. It's time for it now. First stop in Italy. We span the Atlantic to hear from Jack Figon in Rome.
The number of minor clashes between police and strikers is growing steadily here in the second day of Rome's general strike. There's trouble brewing, and unless the strike is settled soon, these minor clashes may well turn into the kind of serious rioting that is the obvious aim of the communists. This morning, the Ministry of Transport began furnishing transportation throughout the paralyzed city with several hundred of the little camionetti, the trucks that were the only means of transportation during the war. Each truck is guarded by several police, and at every terminal, crowds of strikers are milling around trying to stop this service. The government announced that more trucks were being brought in from surrounding towns. Some attempts have been made to block roads leading to Rome, but so far, traffic has been kept moving. Even socialist leader Nenni found himself involved in a minor clash at Piazza Colonna, just around the corner from the Parliament building this morning. Police were driving jeeps into a crowd milling around the entrance to the building when Nenni and Communist Deputy Fayetta, on their way from Parliament, stopped to argue with the police. Neither of the two leftist leaders were injured, but they did get a little first-hand, rough experience in the art of demonstrating. The back-to-work movement, started by the Christian Democrat section of the Labor Federation, is growing. With transportation of a sort available, many more workers, confused and disgusted with the strike, will return to their jobs. The communist-dominated federation has warned that efforts to break the strike in this manner will be met by force. There are some signs of changing sentiment within the executive committee of the federation, however. Last night, the vote was 13-8 for continuing the strike, as compared to 17-3 2 days ago. This is Jack Begon in Rome.
Next, that report on the foreign ministers by Merrill Muller in London.
The Kremlin, apparently on direct instructions of Marshal Stalin, has sent Foreign Minister Molotov a new conciliatory instruction for the Big Four conference in London, including a concession on Russia's reparation demand from Germany, I'm told today by Eastern European diplomatic sources. These sources, admittedly associated with communism, state that Molotov requested new instructions from Moscow in order to meet Secretary of State Marshall's demands for clarification of Russia's reparation demands. These instructions, with a statement Molotov is to make today or tomorrow, arrived from Moscow last night. Stalin and the Kremlin are reported in a conciliatory mood since they have nothing to lose. My diplomatic sources point out that the Kremlin, in the past week, has twice surprised the Western world with considerable financial retrenchments in its policy of European reparation demands. The first was in the reevaluation of the Austrian shilling, where the Russians had been flooding the market with their own printing and then suddenly agreed to help stabilize the nation's finances. The second today is the Russian settlement for 25 cents on the dollar with Hungary on all German asset debts, which Hungary owes Russia by virtue of that satellite peace treaty. My sources state that the Russian concession on German reparations will be nowhere near as great, but that it is likely to be more than a quarter reduction. This would represent no actual loss, since Russia has already taken that out of Germany without any bookkeeping. But as a concession on paper, it will look good. It will prolong the council meeting here by pushing the ministers into the more delicate debate of political unity on Germany, a problem for which no minister wishes to be responsible. This is Merrill Muller in London.
The anticipated report from the Far East, I am just informed, will not be heard this morning. We are unable to contact our correspondent in Tokyo at the moment. We're sorry this is true. However, we do want to note at this time that Chinese communists have now cut the railway north to Mukden, Manchuria, in 8 places. This is according to an acknowledgement of the government in Peiping. And these new forays of the communists, which actually extended south of the Great Wall into China proper, have prevented expected resumption of Peiping, Mukden traffic. An Associated Press correspondent, Harold K. Milks, has made a trip over a portion of a rail line in that country, and he reports how they made it. An 11-car special Blue Express, as it was called, made the first trip over a section of rail line recently laid. It was preceded and followed at times by armored trains and carrying guards with submachine guns. And correspondent Milks accompanied a party of officials, including China's Minister of Economic Affairs, on this tour of a section of the war zone. It all points up the fact that railroad traffic in the war zone out there, where the government and communist forces are fighting, railroad traffic is not a very safe thing and not a thing that runs smoothly in any way. Since we do have a bit of additional time here, I'd like to augment our mention of what's taking place in the Holy Land by including a report from Jerusalem, which tells us in part that the whine of bullets and the dull boom of grenades have ushered in the 13th day of terror in Palestine. That is the 13th day since the United Nations voted to partition the Holy Land over the opposition of the Arabs. Back home again now, and time for our morning checkup by Leif Eade in Washington.
This morning, it's that man Ed Pauley again. The last time it was oil and politics that wouldn't mix, and Pauley didn't get to be Undersecretary of the Navy. Now he's in the Army, Special Assistant to the Secretary, and he'll soon find out whether wheat and politics mix any better. Republicans say that Democrat Pauley is speculating in the grain markets while working for Uncle Sam, with the inference that he might be getting useful inside information. Pauley says he doesn't want to quibble and says, yes, I have holdings in grain, but his dealings are perfectly proper and ethical. He says he had those holdings before he came to work for the Army Department to protect myself and my family against rising prices. But as he promised, he's getting out of the market as fast as he can without having to pay those terrific tax rates on short-run windfall profits on speculation. He said it was understood when he came back to work for the government that he'd have nothing at all to do with any Army deals in anything that he had any financial interest in, and he's had no inside information of any kind. And he says everybody, as long as we have inflation, ought to get into the commodities market to protect himself. Chairman Bridges, Senate Appropriations Committee, will put the questions to Ed Pauley this morning. Otherwise, the Republican Policy Committee on the Senate side meets to pass on the long-term anti-inflation program. And there's a rumble from freshman Republican Senator Baldwin, who wants to give the president what the Republican leaders don't want to give, club-in-the-closet rationing powers over meat, wheat, and other scarce foods. And commenting on Henry Wallace's statement that he'd vote for Senator Taft over President Truman, Taft's friends wish that Henry would pick somebody else as his favorite Republican. This is Leif Eade in Washington.
In Baltimore, a new drug that both assists penicillin in its miraculous work and reduces its cost has been described at the University of Maryland Medical School. The report on this development in the forward march of medicine was made by Dr. Paul W. Wilcox, a research specialist. In another part of the nation, up in the Northwest at Seattle, Washington, some lucky veteran, he must be a former enlisted man and have two children, is going to rent a new $15,000 home for 2 years at only $60 a month. Seems a builder pled guilty to illegally using veterans' priorities to build homes, one of which he occupied himself. The judge ruled he must move out, set the rent, and the requirements for an occupant. They'll draw lots. More news in a moment, but now your announcer.
The liberties and privileges we all enjoy are as natural to us as breathing. We simply take them for granted. But right now, when so many countries of the world are standing at the crossroads between free government and dictatorship, it's important that we stop taking our liberties for granted, that each of us makes it his own private and personal job to be the kind of good citizen who's going to advance those liberties and help make sure that they remain as live and real as they were when our forefathers gave them to us, and when our friends and brothers died to preserve them. Your government protects your rights, but your government is you. And unless you exercise those rights wisely and continuously, they will be gravely endangered. Your American heritage is your most priceless possession. So remember, we are standing at the crossroads right now in many of the European countries, and your American heritage, again, is your most priceless possession. Now, back to the NBC newsroom.
In New York City, a market official has accused meat firms of holding back supplies in hopes of higher prices. This morning, both wholesalers and retailers have risen in rebuttal. In Albany, New York, the manager of one of those self-service laundries says it's astonishing how many men now come in and do the family wash, and they ask fewer questions and follow directions better than the ladies. Gentlemen, take a bow. In Philadelphia, Ben Kaplan is an owner of a company making automobile burglar alarms. Mr. Kaplan recently took the one off his car to loan to a friend and is using taxis temporarily. In Maywood, New Jersey, 10-year-old Timothy Murphy saw yesterday's snow, figured it just right for his new skis. Police found him going up and down a hill, but insisted on taking him home. You see, it was 4 o'clock in the morning. That's the story, folks. John Cameron Swayze saying goodbye from the NBC newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.